Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
Please welcome the hilarious and talented Dana Gould!
Dana!
Thank you very much. I always like to get my daylight savings off with guesting on a podcast. That's how we do.
Right.
Yeah. I feel you about getting your... It does throw your kids off. I have three teenagers. So
yeah.
So right. I'm always seconds away from murder. It rotates. But one of them is always on death's door.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God, man.
Is it like one of those things, too, where you said, like, because they're teen, because, like, you know, as a teenager, I basically was like a mummy in a tomb, like sleeping for most of my days. So does this like exacerbate that trend for the kids?
Yeah. One of them is still asleep because they didn't have school today for a school bureaucratic thing. But and I always have to like go back to like remember how I was as a teenager, because there is I in my life, I meet people that I knew before I was 30 and I just issue a blanket apology. I'm sorry.
right.
You knew me before I was 30, I was wrong and you were right. And I'm sorry
about everything.
Right? Yeah. It's just it's just an Etch-a-Sketch at 30. Let's just restart this thing right now.
Yeah, that's good policy,
I know you can kind of tell some of the past illustrations are on the Etch-a-Sketch. It's not perfect, but it's mostly cleared.
It's just
and now
a ghost,
there's a smiling face.
A ghost of old behaviors.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, mine are 4 and 5. And so usually my problem is that they spring out of bed and like start jumping on me at like, you know, way too early. But now I got a preview of literally dragging their body to the car.
I get both because we have 3 dogs and 4 cats. and three kids. And so, like, I get the cats wake me up. Literally, the cats literally get on my body.
Oh, right.
And
feed me.
Like, how many, you know, how much evolution until you can open a can? You know?
Right.
you're just a failure. You're a biological failure. Yeah, and exactly. And then, yeah, and then I have, so it's just, it's every day is hell.
Bliss. Sounds like bliss.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool, man. How's, I see that you're out on the road occasionally. What's, stand up like these days?
I've been on the road. Right now, I've been home because I'm writing a film and I'm working on a TV series that I don't know if I can announce it yet. It's just, I'm just a writer on it. I don't know what the deal is with it, but it's being made. And then I'm plugging my little show on YouTube, Hanging with Dr. Z. So the shows I'm doing I'm doing in town. I perform at the Improv a lot and at a thing called Supernova, which I really like. Yeah. And then probably later in the summer when things lighten up, I'll go back on the road. Sometimes I go out by myself and sometimes I go out with Bobcat Goldthwait. And we do, we like to think of ourselves as comedy's version of Seals and Croft, you know, just out there.
Nice, man.
Hilarious, hilarious as a summer breeze.
Right.
How are the rooms like? Have you noticed a post pandemic difference? Is everything?
I think people are really happy to be out. That's what I find more. Right. There's two things that I've noticed since the pandemic. One, people are very happy to be out. Two, a lot of people that are like comedy fans during the pandemic, they lived on Twitter. And then right. You go into a club and you quickly realize that Twitter is not the world and that you actually can say something without enraging a certain segment of the population, and that people are actually they're a lot looser than you think. Right. You know, Twitter is literally like knock, knock. What about the homeless? You prick, you know, right. and the world is not like that, which is just refreshing.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm really not bemoaning heightened sensitivities. Like I accept that. I understand it. It's called human evolution. It's society progressing. I do understand that, and I welcome it. And as a writer, I welcome the challenge. And as a middle-aged white guy, I also know that no one cares what I think, and that's fine. 2,000 years was a great run. I get it.
I got the last 50 or so. Sorry.
Yeah, no problem. Did you think they were going to go? But in terms of like the Rogan aspect of it, did you think they were going to go quietly after 2,000 years? You think they're going to shrug? But it is nice that people's sphincters are a little loose, that you can actually talk about things. You can laugh about things.
Right,
sure. Which is nice. And but I'm really not pissing and moaning.
Yeah, yeah.
And also that knock-knock joke kills, though, too.
It does.
What is something from your search history?
Oh, yeah. It was funny. I didn't even know. I was like, I haven't had to look up my search history. And then this morning when I was like, oh, I need to know that, I looked up. I mean, I just Googled Google search history, and then my search history popped up.
There you go.
But it was funny. I saw that there like a couple of days ago. I Googled the David Archuleta, you remember that little homie from American Idol? Yeah. He was all like that, you know, like
right.
Little young cute homie, but I don't know why. I was just like, man, what is that fool up to? I don't know why I thought of him. And and I looked it up, and yeah, he's still out there doing it, right? You know, you remember what I'm talking about, right?
Like, yeah, dude. It's like he just had one of those people who had a very specific moment and then gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's he up to?
I looked it up and I was like, he seemed like he was going to pop because came in second place. You know, usually like the top five or whatever got something, but he did drop like a record, and then he went on his like Mormon missionary thing for 2 years. He was just out the game for 2 whole years.
Okay.
And then he went and did that, which I kind of respect that, you know, and then he came back and yeah, he's still doing like little tours and stuff. So he's out there, man.
For a second, I thought you said Adam, like you're talking about the football player Adam Archuleta.
And I was like, oh, I remember him when he was on the Rams. There was this clip. I remember my friends would talk about how his hamstrings were so strong. Like he could like lift himself up from like a lying position just using his hamstring strength. Yeah, we're like, yo, this shit is fucking wild. Anyway.
Like he's all like risen from the dead kind of look.
Just like, you're like, oh, yeah. Shit. No.
I'd like to see David Archuleta try that shit. Okay.
Yeah.
Who's a? It's not a competition.
Saving
Miles,
people.
You know?
Yeah.
Like I was searching Adam Archuleta actually, and he is stronger.
He has stronger hamstrings. Yeah. So.
David Archuleta got the good ass hair, but he don't have hamstrings like that though.
You know? Exactly.
I mean that. Exactly. So when he was on American Idol, he was like a child, right? It was like a Bieber type thing.
Was that? Yeah, it was like when you first saw him. Yeah, he was like, and he was. But he started playing into the, like, oh, I'm the little cute homie, like a little too hard. It started kind of getting cheesy.
Right.
Crossed the line from, like, oh, man, this dude's super likable to, like, all right, homie, come on.
Nobody acts like that.
They would ask questions, like, hey, so, you know, what do you think of our friend? Well, you know, and it was like, right, calm down, homie.
Right. Right. We get it to a point. But when
he's 30 now. He's in his 30s.
Yeah.
I wonder how that shit plays now.
Well, probably not good if you're like rubbing your mitts like, well, you know,
why would you think you qualify for this bank loan? You know,
well, you know, I work hard and I love my family.
See what my net worth is. I mean, it seems like a pretty safe loan for you guys. I don't know.
I wonder if anyone's ever done a list of like careers that are interrupted by the Mormon mission, like the sacrifices that people put in for that. Cause like Sean Bradley, right? He was going to be one of the top picks. He was still like number two, but he was number two coming off of his Mormon mission. Like,
oh,
remember?
Right.
He was like, he stopped playing basketball to do his mission. Yeah.
I just remember writing Sean Bradley off pretty quickly. I'm sorry. That's what I did. Like, this guy is too tall. And the best he'll be is like a monstar in space.
Yeah. I think I heard on a basketball podcast, they all like run together in my head, but like somebody saying that like when you look at his metrics on defense, he's like one of the best to ever do it. But right. it was just very like quick moment when he was peak.
Yeah.
Sarah, what is something you think is overrated?
I think that cashews have coasted as a snack nut, I've come to conclude, because I was eating a mixture of peanuts and cashews the other day, and I found myself really favoring the peanuts. And that got me to thinking about the fact that cashews are more expensive, more difficult to harvest. I think like the labor involved in making cashews is a lot more intense. I don't think we really grow them domestically. And so now I have a conspiracy theory that cashews aren't better than peanuts. They're just more difficult to obtain.
Right.
Mm.
Like we're like at the will of the old like nut prices of the like 19th century where they're like cashews are like gold. And we're still like, I don't know. The taste isn't that great compared to a peanut. Because like cashews have a flavor, but they don't have that peanut bite.
I'm cashew gang. I love cashews.
Wow.
Despite the fact that when you look at them and how they're grown, they do look like the poop of another fruit. They're just like little curly things that hang out of the bottom of what looks like a pepper, like a yellow bell pepper. And I still love them because they're soft. They're softer, so like they don't get that little
easy on the teeth.
Easy on the teeth and easy on the like. I don't get the little chunk like almonds. I feel like I'm eating little pieces of wood, and the wood pellets like get stuck in my throat, and then I'm having coughing fits like out of nowhere. Like 45 minutes later, I'm just like, all right, well, this conversation's ruined. I'll be over here coughing like you've poisoned me for the next 15 minutes instead of having a conversation. But cashews don't really fuck with me like that because they're just, I don't know. I think they start very soft, and even after they're roasted, they're soft and easy to get down.
Okay.
I swallow them whole. Yeah, is that not correct?
That's kind of winning me over. I should try doing that. But yeah, the softness of the nut, I hadn't thought of that. You're right, because like most nut situations, you're like, I am working to obtain these calories, and cashews just like want to get inside of you. That is a good quality.
But is the flavor thing not a knock against it? It's pretty bland.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
I like the flavor. It's like salty and kind of creamy to me. That's...
Right. No, I mean, I get, I fuck with all the textures. If it's probably rich in oils, that's why it's very easy on the teeth. But I don't know, like the flavor of a cashew treat isn't as appealing to me as a flavor of like a peanut treat. Just going off of that alone. That's all I'm saying. That's all I have to say. And there's no need to escalate this disagreement any further.
I mean, if we're going peanuts versus cashews, like in terms of a overrated, underrated, like how many candy bars are there that have cashews as an ingredient? Like zero, right?
Yeah, we have no basis for comparison. We're flying blind.
I don't know. That's
here.
What I'm saying. And maybe that's where I'm being, you know, robbed as a consumer of not being able to have those cashew choices in my candy bars. But nothing wrong with these fucking peanut ones, because I fucking love the fuck out of those.
Yeah, no, I'm happy with the place of peanuts as the predominant. Like peanut butter is one of my, you know, probably takes up about 25 to 30% of the calories I consume.
It's your blood type, I think.
Yeah, my blood type is Reese's. Yeah, it's not good, actually. It's very bad, very bad. I think I paused yesterday's recording of TDZ to take a big bite of peanut butter toast.
That's right.
And Miles called it out and was like, that's the worst possible thing you could be taking a massive bite of, like, right peanut as butter. We're introducing our
of
guest.
Mouth glue while you record your podcast.
Just intentionally wading into the waters of that Aaron Burr, Michael Bay commercial.
That commercial was incredible. Like, I really love how many people absolutely remember it. Like, they like no trouble at all. You say Aaron Burr and they're like, oh yeah, that commercial.
Yeah. It's still the best thing Michael Bay has ever directed. I
didn't watch Hamilton because of that commercial. I was like, I already get it, bro.
I get it.
I need to know.
You're Aaron like, Burr, the legacy is complete.
Yeah. I'm like, I really,
right,
in my
like,
mind,
nothing
I was
left
like,
to learn.
Right. I was like, I already learned the parable of the man in the body cast who was trying to. Was that kind of body cast?
Aaron Burr. I don't know. I don't think he was. No.
Oh, he's
I think
a
he
different
working
one.
At an Aaron Burr museum.
Yes.
He was a different guy.
And weren't like the fighting like muskets like in a box next? There was some other like artifact next to him.
Yeah, he had all the artifacts there.
The body cast is a different Got Milk commercial.
Yeah. What is something you think is underrated?
Tubs. Okay, hear me out. Huh? When I was moving,
tubs?
I had tubs of stuff.
Oh,
I Miami Vice.
Yeah. Oh, what? I don't know.
Crockett and Tubbs. It's an old people's
old,
reference from the 1980s.
That's totally clearly what I meant, 100%.
Yeah,
I meant
I
both versions of Tubbs.
Save yourself, Palavi. Let us die in Chugidom by ourselves. Go live.
I just gave in to admitting that I'm fighting aging, and you guys are like, Crockett and Tubbs.
Hey, Crockett and Tubbs.
And I better remember Crockett and Tubbs.
Most people think the Waterworld stunt show at Universal actually used to be the Miami Vice stunt show before. They just changed the name.
Don't tell any of these youngsters, though. They won't listen.
Mad. Why are you guys talking normally?
Sorry, yeah.
That's actually how they sound off podcast.
Hey, thanks for coming back, Molly.
Oh, shit. Did I let my regular voice slip in? All right, I'm back.
I like tubs. I like tubs of things. As I was moving to my new place, I was just like, let me just load it in my tub. Now I have like a tub of my like workout equipment back there. I'm showing you guys.
Oh, yeah.
And like a tub of my like plant care stuff. I fucking love tubs, man. They're like
easy
plastic. They like don't break easy. You can put whatever you want in a tub.
Yeah, you can reuse it.
I'm so old. I love tubs.
Hey, you're not old enough to get that Crockett and Tubbs reference.
I know,
so you're right on the
tubs
spectrum.
I'm on
you're
the tubs.
I love. Yeah, you're like, I like moving tubs. And we're on this side being like, I miss Miami Vice.
I remember show with that name in it.
The man in the white blazer.
Yeah. What's the container store? Are you, do you like to go into a container store?
I'm sure I would. I love Daiso. I love like the little containers at Daiso. Like I think that they have like a lot of cute shit. I bought a cute ass broom. Ugh, it was adorable. But like I
shout out brooms.
But I'm not a crate and barrel or like what is it? Yeah, I'm not a like a big tub person because I don't have like as much space for it. So I feel I've just been using tubs that like have come into my possession from like old roommates and stuff. I haven't had a real chance to go like ham on tubs.
Get a new tub. Yeah.
You know?
Sometimes,
but I feel like I could.
At Lowe's or some shit, they'll be running their sales. I'll pick up some tubs.
Damn.
Because it's easy. Because like I kind of hoard some stuff, like some documents and shit. Because my dad was like audited years ago. And he's like, you got to keep all this shit, man. You never know. So I'm like, okay. And so it's nice to have like tubs that, you know, I'm like, this shit is not going to fucking fall apart because it's cardboard. I can use it. My children can use these tubs and their children will use these tubs.
And I have tubs of like Indian clothes and accessories. And I'm like, it's the Indian wedding season. Got to bust out my tub. I have tubs of like, I like to save like sentimental things like cards and stuff from friends. And so I got my like sentimental tub, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
See, stackable tubs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And pretty soon, you know, you just accumulate tubs and tubs and tubs, and pretty soon your, you know, living space looks like one of those container ships.
That's
where we're at, you know. My wife and I have been married for almost 14 years, and it's just been a process of steady tub accumulation.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And we got some that are not the color they were when we purchased them.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And they... I don't even really know or want to know what's in them. And like, there's no conceivable future in my mind where I'm like, all right, time to dig into these tubs.
Yeah.
I think they're just going to be there until, I guess, my kids go through them.
Your children.
Yeah.
Whereas my children will use the tubs, they're going to be your children's burden.
Right.
I thought about that when moving, because I moved out of a place that, and I had to take everything out. It was being passed from like roommate to roommate, but now the like landlord's family is moving in or something. And I had to clear out decades of shit that like wasn't even mine. And I was like, when I moved into this place and I was like buying a small trash can for the kitchen, I'm like, I'm going to be staring at this trash can for maybe decades. So there was like so much more pressure to buy something that like was like cute, but like reasonable. You know what I mean? I was the stuff that we like surround ourselves with, sometimes like we have clothes from like 15 years ago, but we also have like items in our house that are like, we're going to have them forever, you know? And I'm like, it's like it makes purchases so much more difficult. I'm like, who am I going to even be in 20 years?
Yeah.
What garbage can do I want?
Yeah. You just open it up. Once like we've all died off and there's like a museum of culture, like in Station 11, you can... make a good, my kids will make a good living selling off our, you know, tubs full of first generation iPod chargers and shit like that.
I have three tubs of electronics. I still have to go through all the wires.
Yeah.
Right.
Just a rat's
30
nest.
Pin, yeah. A 30 pin Apple cable, kids. Now this one, this is a 4-6 prong firewire converter.
Yeah.
What?
Why do we save the Apple phone boxes? I know I'm doing it. Because
the shit costs so much money.
Yeah.
That's
the
why.
Boxes? We're like, we're going to keep.
A phone. Like, I do the same shit. I have my fucking, I bought a laptop like a couple months ago. I still have the box. I'm like, man, that
why
shit
are we
like
doing
a lot
this?
Of money.
Shit yeah.
Like because the boxes they come in are like nicer than the ones that I'll probably be buried in. Like they're fucking nice. Like
your coffin, you can slide out your coffin like a matchbox, like an Apple iPhone box.
Hell yeah.
we're gonna shove Jack in.
And it comes with a free sticker too.
Put me in that wall.
We gotta charge Jack up.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where First-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring the Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back. Time for a heat check. Trump. Okay, last week, quite a week for him last week. Last Wednesday, he was talking about during the Texas Republican primaries, like, everybody I picked, they're winning so well, they're doing so great. He couldn't have been doing better. You know, he left out the part where most of them are running unopposed, but sure. De facto kingmaker here. And he also conveniently ignored how many of his other handpicked candidates were not doing that great, like David Perdue, who he is trying to sick on his arch nemesis, Governor Brian Kemp, in the governor's race for Georgia, because Brian Kemp famously refused to rat fuck the election for Donald Trump. So Trump is now just using the strategy of like, well, then you're my enemy and I'll send a bunch of unqualified candidates who don't have as great a chance of winning after you to create more intra-party fighting. And, you know, a few years ago, his endorsement meant a lot. Like, you know, it was the kind of thing that a lot of elected people would be like, well, oh, God, I got to get that endorsement. If he picks this other person, then I'm cooked. But that potency has decreased a bit. And now that he's out of office, his strategy just seems to be really just to use his endorsement as an attack against other Republicans that he has deemed disloyal. So not a great strategy if you're looking at the long term, but a great strategy if you just want to serve your ego, which I'll give him that. That's his superpower. And aside from that, I think we're also seeing that there's a lot of Republicans who are really trying to distance themselves from Trump's pro-Putin comments, that it's becoming a little more clear that there's like this openness to disagreeing in public with the former president. And now that's probably because support for Putin is already just very low outside of like the OAN and Newsmax and like Fox News crowd. But this, like, people like this, you have Representative Mike Simpson, a Republican from Idaho, says, quote, I agree with Pence that there's no room in our party for apologists for Putin. Again, that's a direct shot at Trump. And like the people followed up that question when he said, okay, when he said he agrees with Mike Pence that there's no room for Putin apologists. When he was asked, like, is that sort of the wider sentiment, like in most of the Republican conference, the journalist asked, he said, yep. Yep, that's pretty much the widely held consensus. John Katko from New York, another Republican, he was more direct. He said Putin isn't a genius and neither is Trump. So I think it's an easy win for Republicans because it's such a clear thing. Like, you're like, you don't, you're not intellectually built to try and argue why Putin is a genius and why that's good for everything that you stand for as a politician. But like, so I'm not holding my breath in the sense that I'm like, oh, the tide is turning. But it is clear that they do see that it's very problematic for them to take that sort of idea on and sort of campaign on it. Because I look back at a few years ago and you have people like Lindsey Graham who would bend over backwards trying to defend his like overtly racist remarks. And you're like, holy shit, he's got everybody like lockstep with this nonsense. But I think this one, it's like just so it's so obvious that this ain't the take for the party to be hopping in on. And it is bad. I just want to point out, like, it gets pretty bad when you have people like Sean Hannity who are essentially begging Trump to, you know, maybe condemn Vladimir Putin. Let's hear that.
You came under some fire when you said that Vladimir Putin's very smart. I think I know you a little bit better than most people in the media. And I think you also recognize he's evil, do you not?
Well, I was referring to the fact that he said this is an independent nation, talking about Ukraine. And I said, this is before there was any attack. He's calling it an independent nation. Now, a lot of things are changing. When you look, this doesn't seem to be the same Putin that I was dealing with. But I will tell you, he wouldn't have changed if I were dealing with him. He wouldn't have changed. You know, I supplied, and I know Biden is trying to take credit, and they're all trying to take credit about.
Okay, so now he completely missed that off ramp for him to take, and he just goes on to be like, you know, he goes on to be like, the Javelin anti-tank busters, I gave them that. And Hannity's even like, oh my God, bro, like, please, let me try one more time. The interview goes on for a little bit more, and Hannity tries fucking one more time. He's like, here it is again. I'm going to put the point out that it's you do not want to agree with this person. You want to be opposed to the actions of Vladimir Putin. Maybe this will be the time he starts to listen. Maybe not.
Let me go back then to the issue of the criticism, because I've known you well over 25 years. And when you got criticized for saying that Vladimir Putin is smart, we've had many conversations, and you've often quoted to me Sun Tzu, The Art of War, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Is that how you viewed Vladimir? Did you view Vladimir Putin and people like President Xi and Kim Jong-un and the Iranian mullahs as enemies that you needed to keep close?
I got along with these people. I got along with them well. That doesn't mean they're good people. It doesn't mean anything other than the fact that I understood them and perhaps they understood me. Maybe they understood me even better. That's okay, because they knew there'd be a big penalty.
Anyway, so he goes on to not condemn anything and just says, actually, I'm really good homies with them. Thank you for bringing that up. And he really did the thing where he was trying to do, like, when I'm sure in the past when he said racist stuff and you got to be like, hey, man, I've known you a long time, and I know that's not your heart. You know what I mean? Because you've hired black people in the past. So how do you feel when people try and paint your words like that? And then you'd be like, exactly, you know, I've been a big supporter, blah, blah, blah. He couldn't even do that in this instance. He's, I think, very much locked into this idea that it's only him that could have prevented an invasion because he was so close with Vladimir Putin. And that's essentially the track he's on at the moment.
That's hilarious. Just because I don't know. Trump is such a wild figure to me because he lacks any kind of actual charisma. Like, he's not good at giving speeches, even the ones pre-written for him. He's not
attractive. Because people tune out after 15 minutes.
He's not attractive in the way you would think, like it's like a sterling political figure, like, well, he's got a strong jaw and like a face you could trust or something. And like every time he opens his mouth, he sounds like an idiot. And yet there are still people clamoring to hear him speak. That's it's a trip.
I think, but it's, there's something, even the way Hannity was talking, right? There was this level of defeat. It was almost like Hannity was there to try and like prop up this old, like punch drunk boxer that he used to idolize and is slowly realizing he's just a regular creepy old racist guy. And there's not much he can do.
I guess also you have to think that probably Tucker and Hannity are, you know, desperate to have Trump condemn Putin now, because I think they're going to be stuck with their own support of Putin around their necks, you know, and it's going to make their lives difficult. I mean, I think, you know, Tucker in particular, I don't know if he has designs on office or not, but it feels like the reel you could do of, you know, praise for Putin and denial the Ukrainian invasion was about to happen is not going to be very helpful. So I guess they probably want to get Trump to denounce Putin so they can kind of sweep this whole uncomfortable dalliance under the rug. But I gather there are some people who are rallying around Trump in the Republican Party and still kind of supporting Putin, which is,
right.
I mean, let alone from a, you know, moral, ethical, geopolitical standpoint, just from a, you know, self-interested point of view, it's very hard to understand.
Yeah. And I think it's because it's these like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Madison Cawthorn types who, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene was at like a total fascist event that are like, you know, a white nationalist group that loves Putin. And when she was speaking, they were chanting his name and she was just like, she didn't bat an eye at that. And people were like, what the fuck? Madison Cawthorn, we talked about last week, how he was saying like Zelensky's a thug and actually like Ukraine is so corrupt that it's, and they push woke ideologies that this is a good thing that Putin is doing. And you're like, dude, you don't even know what you're saying. I think you're such on autopilot of being like, I just have to agree with whatever Trump says. And that's how I keep going without any understanding again of like the geopolitical nature of this, what the outcomes could mean for anything, and just being like, I don't know, man, I just do whatever Trump does. And then,
but I think
like,
it's also important to realize that these folks really view themselves as part of like an oligarchical society. Like they think like having money, it makes you a better human being. And I think that many of them are hoping for a Putin victory. And like all they talk about is a global shift in like fascist direction. And so this is the start of that. And I think they're excited about it. I don't think that there's any thought other than this is our chance to win and see this swift change brought here, which is.
Right. Because if you can normalize. Yeah. They want to normalize, especially a lot of like the cracking down on like dissident voices or LGBTQ people. And they're like, whoa, we fucking love that. Oh, we love that. You know what? I actually like, and that's a lot of the talking points you hear like on OAN. They're like, I mean, look at what he's against, you know, like that really aligns with a lot of the stuff we're talking about. So why shouldn't we be there? But that's not the case here. So anyway, back to Trump, though, his brand, like the other thing about just sort of his brand waning, right, is like Truth Social, his whole like fucking, you know, Twitter clone that was supposed to upend the whole discourse of the internet, came out. It was a total wet fart. Everyone like could barely register. It was like a waiting line that's like a 500,000 people long, and like people are still barely able to use it. And if you look at it, it's pretty much a failure by all measures. Trump barely uses it. Melania has publicly said that Parler is her official home. His kids don't use it. Many big name media personalities in the conservative like takeosphere do not use it either. And the ones that do, like, they get very little engagement on it and don't seem that excited. And again, I think this shows another aspect of it, that the brand isn't as strong as it used to be, especially when you consider that like the main attraction to this is just being like, hey, Trump's here. Huh? Come on,
but
folks.
The only thing Trump's been good at selling ever is merchandise and reality TV. Like there's not a success story in anything he's ever sold aside from that. So it's still wild to see that people were like, it's going to work. It's like, no, he's never properly invested in a company ever.
Yeah.
it's a stupid idea.
And again, I think the other part of that too is like, I think he, the people behind that social app and a lot of the stuff, these like Republicans who want to set up like these safe spaces for racists and fascists, is that they really don't, like Republicans in this country, they just derive their sense of self from merely being like the antithesis of whatever Democrats are. Like they can only define themselves in relation to this other thing. They have no identity aside from, no, we're the party of regressing. So if there's progress there, the only thing we know how to do is just like try and rein it in and slam on the brakes. We don't really have anything to add outside of being like, no, not this thing they're talking about over there. And again, it shows they have no interest. So they're not interested in an echo chamber. They need these environments where they get to argue with liberals. That's the only, that's their lifeblood. And I think they're also failing to understand. It's like, we don't give a fuck about a place where I can use like racial slurs without being banned. Like, I get off on saying those to liberals. That's how my life works. So it's a bit of a balancing act that I think they're struggling with. And it doesn't help when the first lady's like, fucking truth, I use Parler. Like, what? They can't even get on the same page with their marketing. And lastly, when you talk about products, he's also begging for jet money, which was a huge thing. He was at a fundraising event in Louisiana, and a jet he was on had like an engine failure, and they were forced to have an emergency landing on his way back to Florida. And I apparently freaked the fuck out of him. The next day, there's emails going out to all the supporters being like, we're going to need a little, how would you like to participate in funding the new Trump Force One project? And it's, and again, most people pointed out that that 757 that he was going around during the 2016 campaign, that's like in a fucking hangar in New York. That's like beyond repair. The fucking one engine needs to be replaced. One of them isn't even like on the fucking plane. So he's been framing this as, and also this is a new Air Trump Force One that I've been working on in secret. So even the media doesn't even know about it. No, dude, you panicked on your fucking P-Jet because the engine went down and now you're trying to grift for your own jet money.
You ain't got no money.
Yeah.
You ain't got no money.
And that's, and he's using it on jets. The fuck? So I don't know. It's interesting to keep our eyes on this one. And again, watching how the conversation is like shifting and there's like this one brief moment of like bipartisanship and like that most of the Republican establishment is like, no, we agree. Yeah. Invasion of Ukraine is bad. We agree on that, which is very.
Hate seeing white people at war. Really tears them apart.
Oh, God. Those kids have blue eyes. I mean, I have blue eyes. You know,
there's never been a war in Europe before. It's new to us. It's totally foreign.
Couldn't imagine.
It happens to brown people. Ugh, awful. Yeah,
and that's all.
The weirdest, one of the weirdest ones was, I think one of the French, I don't know if it was the French foreign minister or some French minister said, they drive cars like us.
Like, stop it.
What the hell does that mean?
No!
They drive cars like us.
What did you think Ukraine was before this, too? Like, did you just assume it was the Stone Age? And then you're like, they drive cars like us.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Now let's get into the solution, folks.
Yeah.
I'm talking, of course, about the metaverse. Get pumped.
Get pumped, everybody.
So, you know, I have been skeptical from the start. I just like couldn't imagine a world where suddenly people were interested in using like a 2008 version of virtual reality. Like, but this, you know, there's just the will there. There's like the intention from rich people, and therefore it's not going away, to make this a thing. And
yeah,
like you're starting to see it everywhere. People, you know, at companies that we work with are like talking about the metaverse and like how this is like a thing everybody's going to be trying out and shit. And it's just like,
have your events in the metaverse, man.
Right.
It's just have so your meetings funny. In the metaverse. This reminds me of like how they kept trying to push Google Glass on us. And we were just like, no, we don't want it.
It reminds me of that, but it's
holding.
Like, yeah, we were like NFTs. No, get the fuck out of here with Google Glass, and they were like, okay, we're sorry, I know they're ugly. And with this one, we were like, dude, are you like even stupider than Google Glass? And they just like kind of looked at us, and we're just like, so the metaverse, though, right?
Yeah, like,
the metaverse.
But I don't know. I'm having some hope because like with crypto and like NFTs, like NFTs values are dropping like a crazy amount or whatever. So I'm like, maybe this won't hold, you know, like maybe it'll hold for like an annoying amount of time and then maybe it'll go away.
Well, I feel like NFTs, the model is like, if you're assuming that the way things work in the US at least is that like rich people get richer, which seems to, and like have all the power, NFTs are all
that doesn't
the...
seem like everything I've learned my whole life.
NFTs, the rich, like they're designed to be like scams where rich people get people to invest and then the bottom falls out. So like,
I feel like
that's operating as it was intended to. Like they just didn't tell anyone that that was the intention. But with Metaverse, like, you know, one of the five richest people in the world, I think, has his entire fortune like tied up on the in this, and like probably a lot of his very rich friends. And now like we're seeing, this is the first time I've seen an argument where I'm like, oh yeah, maybe people will be using the metaverse like a year from now.
What a boring thing to invest, like some dumb like VR shit. Like, why not make animals talk? You know what I mean? Like, think of something more creative.
Well, actually, you could like take a, you could have a animal Abby in the metaverse. And so your friends could actually have a conversation with you where you appear to be an animal. Yeah. So
Jack, you do that voice too well.
You ask talking animals, I give you the metaverse. But Miles,
I give you the whatever, like
the Jack, what do we call it again? Metaverse.
I want you to do that to your wife. This is going to result in divorce for sure. But every time, okay. Every time you like, you're advice. Like, I give you clean dishes.
You ask, why didn't I do the dishes? I give you clean
putting
dishes.
The kids to bed.
There it is. But yeah, there's this like new poll with the metaverse, you know, evangelists. They're all pointing to that there's like this work trends poll that's showing that people who are talking about using metaverse technology or emerging technology technologies at work, that group is beginning to grow. So there was 52% of these respondents of employees are open to using digital immersive spaces in the metaverse for meetings or team activities in the next year. 47 are open to representing themselves as an avatar in meetings. Then they say like Gen Z and millennials are 51% and 48% respectively that can actually see that their work could somehow like do some kind of work within using the metaverse, whatever that is. Then Gen X, it's only 37%. Boomers, it's 28%. But more than like when I look at what that where that openness comes from, I don't think it's that necessarily Gen Z and millennials like, dude, I want to use the metaverse. Or like, dude, if I don't have to go in a fucking office, I'll use the fucking metaverse. If that's the binary, like, let's suit up right fucking now because I don't want to go to an office.
Instead of suiting up.
Yeah. And I think when you look at like how this all works, right, a lot of the push of the go back to the office, like energy that we're seeing through government and the media, a lot of it has to do with the fact that commercial real estate took a huge shit in the pandemic. You know what I mean? Like decimated the demand for office space as many companies, they were able to move to remote work. And that shift absolutely smashed the pockets of developers and people who own massive tracts of like commercial buildings and things like that. But it also helped the residential real estate market. So getting asses back into the offices is a huge, like, it, like, that's all part of like a strategy to help recover the commercial like office sector. And that's where I kind of like this metaverse idea, because it's almost like you're seeing this tension between this, you know, traditional tangible like world that real estate deals with. And then these people who back the metaverse are almost advocating for another version of like using space that isn't tied to the physical world and saying, eh, maybe that's where you do it.
Why would anybody want to do this over Zoom?
That's my thing. Is like
that's the hard. Well, see, Jack, come on now.
That's the thing that I'm.
They didn't ask a follow up question where they're like, okay, now Zoom or this other shit.
Right. That's like question two.
Yeah.
And the person who asked it just like got pulled off stage. That's 100% like what I'm curious about. I guess the reason that I brought up like NFTs and like crypto specifically, like more crypto, is that I feel like crypto is a thing where it creates the problems it's attempting to solve, where it doesn't really solve any like new problems. And I feel that way about the metaverse. I'm like, the more I'm all about like automation and technology and innovation, like I think that's like really important. But I think that there are certain technologies that just like create more problems than anything that they're trying to solve, right? Mm-hmm. And I think like with like digital currency and going into crypto and then things like this, it's like how the fuck is like, you, like different generations and different people from different like socioeconomic backgrounds, how are they supposed to like accept this technology that seems to be like more difficult and unnecessary than like Zoom? You know what I mean? Like, it just seems like they're trying to complicate the office situation or like just like interacting with people in general, they're making it more inaccessible, you know?
Right. Yeah, there's too many.
And they're painting it as more accessible. Like, they're like, yeah, you don't have to come in, but you have to build an avatar and wear this fucking mask thing.
You don't have a VR headset? Fuck no. I have a felt like self-facing camera on a laptop. Does
Bro,
that work?
If I have to update my headset before a meeting.
They got me looking dumb in here with the fucking egg avatar in this meeting. Fuck.
Yeah.
Someone didn't update. But yeah, it does seem like right now we've very much found a way to be able to connect, get things done, you know, with just using video, that we can now see each other's facial expressions, that can help already take away some of the need for office space. But yeah, this idea that, well, no, now we got to take to the metaverse. Well, that's...
I don't understand, like, maybe I just don't understand the metaverse enough, and Jack in that voice can explain it to me, but like, what is it offering? Like, what is it offering that Zoom, like, can't practically solve for an office situation?
Paul, you asked for talking animals. I think you mentioned. And when I'm here on Zoom with you, I don't look like a talking animal. But were we to enter the metaverse, I could see like a sick concert, and I could be a talking animal. That's all I got.
I'm changing up my filters right now. I'm a fucking talking animal right now. I'm a reindeer, bitch.
Yeah.
What now? What talking animals do you need now?
I think Mark Zuckerberg probably likes it because he can't see people rolling their eyes at him, like, in the metaverse. Whereas
if it gets
Zoom,
good enough, you better be able to.
Right.
Like, just like, the only way I could see it is if, like, it's so, it's like, I'm talking like the Matrix type shit for me to be like, oh, I see. That's how we use it. Like the shark mouth. Was that a fin on
this
your head?
This is, yeah, I have
a shark
fin
coming out of your mouth.
But it's like
a full
shark face coming out of just my mouth. Like the nose and the eyes are also like this
part
one.
Of it.
Okay, on this one, the metaverse might be ahead on the shark on the shark filter.
You look like one? Bane at a children's Christmas or a children's birthday party. The
right.
Shark
I
one.
Was, I was born in the darkness.
I was born in the darkness. Like, look at my fun mask.
I was born as Baby Shark, molded by Mama Shark.
Do, 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 do. Okay.
Amazing. Okay.
Paulie has been showing off the fact that Zoom can totally do animal faces. And
okay, don't tell people because my metaverse stock just took a dump.
I had a feeling that this kind of came out of nowhere. Like, you... The article that you're linking off to is just it's a blogger page.
This is so funny to me because
the byline is Miles Gray.
No, it's Giles Ray.
Giles Ray.
Oh, I assume that was a typo. That's not even.
This is
a
so
name.
Funny to me because like we're onto the metaverse and somewhere people at Skype are like, "We'll make a comeback."
Right.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. There's brains just churning 40 hours a week trying to come up with, like, so much of America right now is people spending tons and tons of human capital on terrible fucking ideas that are never gonna get off the ground. I guess that's always been like capitalism, but that's definitely happening at Skype. And I still use Skype every once in a while. So
yeah,
wait, for what? Like, is it for like fun?
To have a conversation with a older therapist.
Relative, right?
Yeah.
Okay. There's also like certain like tutoring organizations and stuff that require Skype. Like some places do require Skype or like other weird web-based video conferencing apps, which is strange.
Yeah. See, they still got a little bit of foothold.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about other stuff.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back. And if anything can pull us out of this depressing spiral of news that we've caught ourselves in on this Tuesday, let's talk Dolly Parton. She's out here doing the right thing again in a different way.
Yeah, explain this to me. So I saw just this thing that says she's bowing out of being nominated, or she wants to come out of contention for being inducted into the Hall of Fame because she doesn't want to split votes.
She doesn't want to, basically, so the class that they were nominating included Beck, Devo, Kate Bush, Eminem, Rage Against the Machine, Carly Simon, and others. And she pulled out because she didn't want any herself to take away any votes, which probably she would have been like a unanimous
runaway
win, runaway because she's so popular right now. And her explanation was, you know, I do hope the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame will understand and will be willing to consider me again if I'm ever worthy. This has, however, inspired me to put out a hopefully great rock and roll album at some point in the future, which I have always wanted to do. So basically, she's like, I don't make rock music and I don't feel like I should get nominated ahead of all these other people who do actually make rock music.
Yeah, like Eminem.
Right, like Eminem. So it's interesting. JM, our writer, JM McNabb, put together kind of a history of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And it is, you know, very American. So it started as a marketing grift, basically. Mm. I know.
God,
just like Woodstock, though. I mean, Woodstock also was dreamed up by people on Park Avenue.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically, it started as a guy wanted to put together a TV special featuring rock greats from the 50s and 60s, and an ad man suggested changing the name to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Along with the name change, they planned a modest museum so that said name would make sense. That's it. And then, like, there
that
was
too, now.
That show, like, basically never happened, but people, you know, the TV producer got squeezed out of the organization. They started making their own specials once his 5-year deal expired at the end of the 80s. And that's where we get this idea of a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But yeah, I mean, Like, I, on the one hand, like, I think Dolly Parton should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's great. Like, well, another chance to celebrate her and her music, but...
Yeah, whatever she wants.
Right. Yeah, literally whatever right. she wants.
I think, and that's how she does, that's how she lives her life, too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's just like, I'll do whatever the fuck I want. And who knows, like, what, you know...
Supposedly covered in tattoos.
Yeah, I know.
Right, that's one of
my favorite conspiracy theories.
Not really roll a conspiracy up the theory, sleeves. Just to roll up the sleeves.
Show the guns. Yeah, so, I mean, the way they do the nomination process is kind of confused and half-assed. To begin with, you've got just basically 40 anonymous music journalists who put together the nominating list, and then that list is voted on by a larger pool working in the industry. Again, I think they're mostly like anonymous. So you have to just look at the results to get a sense of their taste or any biases that might be in place, such as Eminem getting on the list of nominees ahead of most great rappers. And
it's just like the Academy Awards. I mean, it's rare the best picture is the best picture.
Right, right. And it's like if the Academy Awards started in the 80s and right. was like, all right, let's get all these, let's knock out all these movies from the past 100 years.
Get them
like,
out
all
the
at the same time.
Yeah.
And then you let a bunch of old white guys vote on it. I'm sure you would end up with a pretty skewed results.
Yeah, right. Exactly right.
Well, it's weird how like they're also like, you know, like Miles Davis will be an inductee, but then there's like this big blind spot for other black artists, even though, and maybe in their mind they're using like, well, they're not really rock, but it's like, well, hold on,
right? Also exactly out they only get
huge
to...
talented people, so what's the logic of this nomination process to begin with?
Yeah, people say they specifically have a blind spot for post-disco R&B acts and black female artists. Sade has never been nominated. Even Chaka Khan was like nominated several times but then removed.
Did these people ever fuck in the late 80s?
Exactly. Like,
and you don't have that on your fucking list? Come on, like, do you fucking know anything about music? The fuck?
How is Tone Loke not in there?
Right. He's like, Wild Thing, man. Oh.
Yeah. But it does just seem like they check the Q ratings of various celebrities and are like, all right, yeah. Dolly Parton's hot right now. Let's throw in there.
Right.
Yeah. It's like people who say, the JFK assassination was when America lost its innocence. Right. They did nothing else before that.
Nothing before that.
That wasn't innocent.
Yeah. No fucking around with atomic bombs, right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Slavery? Maybe slavery?
No.
Innocent mistake.
And Jackie got shot.
Only had the best intentions.
Well, you know that was all set up by Fauci, right?
Yeah.
I don't have to tell you that.
Time, of course. Fauci's time machine.
Yeah. Right, no.
JFK is going to be back any day.
Of all the people to be the villain.
Right.
Nice doctor.
Nice. Like, yeah, I don't know, you know, we're trying our best.
Even like, even in the memes they make, it's so hard to make him look evil. You know how like, Hillary Clinton, they'll find like some like her mid sneeze or something.
Yeah.
Or use that shit. Well, like Fauci, all the photos are like he just looks like a stock photo of nice old doctor guy.
Yeah.
And like even with a red filter, it's I don't know, they're visually not really catching.
There's a clip, I don't know if you saw the documentary about Mr. Rogers. I think it's called Won't You Be My Neighbor? I think.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And there's a beautiful. I mean, the whole premise of the doc, if you haven't seen it, is he was really Mr. Rogers.
Right.
You know, he was a beautiful human being who worked really hard and had a family, and none of his kids are meth heads. They all love him and they miss him. And his wife is lovely, and he was a minister, and he worked really hard. He had adversity and he struggled through it, and he was famous all of his life, and he never raped anybody, and we don't know how that happened. We're studying it. But there was a thing like Fox News, like they were attacking Mr. Rogers because he said that every kid is special, and so like that's the problem with society, this guy thinks every kid is special,
right?
And they're not special. No, he just means that their kids deserve love. That's all he's saying.
Oh, but, kids deserve love.
You know, and it's when you have a problem in your brain where everything provokes anger and that your knee-jerk response to everything is anger, that you will find yourself defying logic to justify your emotion, like attacking somebody like Anthony Mr. Fauci or Mr. Rogers. It's like,
yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of toxic masculinity like that shaped, you know, me, like growing up. I came out of the process of like being a teenager feeling like the only acceptable emotion was anger,
sure.
and that like sadness and, you know, guilt and any vulnerable emotion had to like go into the black box and come out as anger. And like it takes, yeah.
There's a great quote to that end, a great quote that you have on my desktop by Joe Strummer of The Clash.
Yeah.
Okay.
Punk rock means exemplary manners to your fellow human beings. Fuck being an asshole, which is what some of you pricks thought it was.
There you go. I like it.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of punk rock, we do have to talk about the Shamrock Shake because St. Patrick's Day is coming up and there's nothing more punk rock than...
One of my very best friends, my ride or die, Ken Daly, was in a Shamrock Shake commercial as a child actor in like 1980. Wow. And if you YouTube Shamrock Shake commercial, odds are you will see my hilarious young Ken Daly in a Shamrock. He was also in the movie The Karate Kid. He was Ralph Macchio's buddy in The Karate Kid.
Oh. Wait, which one? The one who ditches him at the beach when he gets kicked?
But he's the one that's there at the fight at the end. It's like, you did it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. He's his buddy in The Karate Kid. And he's in a lot of stuff.
Karate Kid is second on my list of movies I watched, you know, 100 times before I was 7 years old. So.
Oh, yeah. Do you watch Cobra Kai?
I watched up through season 3 and my shark jumping meter started going.
I haven't seen season 4 yet.
I didn't watch it.
Yeah, please don't tell me they all become spies or something.
Gets very QAnon influenced.
Oh no. Yeah. It is one thing about the show which I love is that as somebody who lives there where the show takes place now, you know, it's like not everyone's in a dojo. Like I drive around all day and I'll rarely meet anyone who's in a dojo.
I was in Griffith Park this weekend hiking with my wife and there was many large karate classes doing like demonstrations. And then we were like driving home from that. And there was a dojo that was like bursting at the door with like people. I was like, it's all happening. It's all happening. This is what I always dreamed living in Southern California would be like.
The karate craze of 22.
So they only get released around this time of year in limited quantities. There's a highly devoted fandom. You know, JM wrote this
story. Don't they taste like scope?
A little bit. They taste like scope. Tainted vanilla milkshake, but you know, JM called it an eerily green drink. But you know, it's anyone who's familiar with matcha, it's not there's nothing eerie about that.
In the building,
does it get its green coloring from anything as wholesome as like matcha tea leaves? Probably not. I'll say definitely not. Nah. But
as an Irish person, I don't think of ice cream. When I what's a drink the Irish like?
Ice cream.
Nice foamy.
Nice frothy mouthwashy ice cream.
Yeah, frothy mouthwash.
Yeah. it's the only dessert mouthwash we have.
Yeah. And helps cover any odors on your breath when you head home. Hey, come on now.
Hey. That's true.
That and the McRib.
Yeah. Right. I mean, they know what they're doing. They've been doing the Shamrock Shake for longer than I thought. I thought it just like popped up in the 90s, but this is long time ago.
Yeah, it's forever. Yeah.
There is a Shamrock Shake Finder app you can use to make sure you're
Shamrock
going to the right one.
Shamrock Shake Finder.
And there's even a founding controversy of like who invented it. There was somebody in Connecticut claimed to have invented it in 66 and 70. There was a promotion around it to like raise money for children's medical treatment. And McDonald's like disputed that claim that it was invented by one of their franchisees in 66 and now just like quietly changed it to be the fact after like defaming this franchisee for years. But there's also Uncle O'Grimacy.
Yeah.
Uncle O'Grimacy. Mm-hmm.
Yep. He's basically a green grimace who started popping up in McDonald's ads in the mid 70s, made of like a green fur that looks very similar to Oscar.
He seemed to somehow be made of Shamrock Shake material, yet also drank it. Right. It's sort of like the human equivalent of a guy that walked around eating his own hand.
Right. But yeah, and then in 2017, McDonald's tweeted an image celebrating this Irish tweet with the image of a guy turning a shake with like five straws into, you know, the traditional Irish instrument bagpipe.
Yes.
Set against the traditional Irish landscape of Stonehenge. So,
dude, just take a dump right on the flag for that commercial. What the fuck?
Not putting a ton of thought in
a great traditional Irish tiki hut.
Right. Oh, they can't win.
Anyways, I haven't had one since I was a kid, but I think it's sort of like,
do you guys drink boba at all? That's the new thing. It's like, here's a delicious drink. Now let's pour some shit in it that makes it hard to drink.
Right. Yeah. That you'll choke on. Yeah. It's funny. In the beginning, I was in high school, I loved it with boba. Now I'll go and I'm like, no boba, hold the boba. Yeah, please, just the drink part, please. I don't want to chew while I drink.
Yeah. It gets stuck in the straw. Then you start to drink and your head starts to go.
Right. Yeah.
But Uncle O'Grimacy, though, was also controversial because there's this like, Jay was pointing out that an event in 78, a guy in an Uncle O'Grimacy costume, like this is a rumor, like on mic or whatever, just said that, quote, the only good British soldier is a dead British soldier. Yep.
Well, then he is Irish. That's
that meant something in 78. Yeah. So that's the rumor as to why Uncle O'Grimacy disappeared.
From the Shamrock Shake, the official drink of the Troubles.
Right. they were like trying to intimate too that he was like connected to the IRA. Like, oh, he was Sinn Fein, man. You better watch out. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. I mean, even the Philly Voice said Uncle O'Grimacy was let go shortly after because of his controversial ties to the IRA.
I don't know if
the Philly Voice is to be entirely taken at face value here, but anyways.
It's Belfastastic.
Yeah, right.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
Right, gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at CedarPoint.com.